Hello and welcome to another Run, Think, Shoot, Live interview. The year is 1883. You're in a town. You work in a shop and suddenly things are not as you expect. And this is Half Rats, a fever dream. And joining me today is, in fact, Half Rats. Hello, Half Rats.
Hello, everyone.
So let's talk about how I can address you. Do I call you Mr. Rats or can I call you by your first name, Half?
For the sake of brevity, you can say Half or you can say Mr. Rats. But right, I guess Mr. Rats is the same length as Half Rats. So, I mean, I guess it's up to your, it's up to your discretion.
All right. So Mr. Half Rats would just be too long, really, wouldn't it?
Yes.
HR. Can I call you HR?
What? Oh, yeah, you could, actually. You could call me HR.
All right. I'm glad we got that done. All right. Well, hello, HR, and welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Philip.
You're welcome. So why don't you start by telling the readers a little bit about yourself with respect to gaming and modding and that aspect?
Well, as far as modding goes, you know, this is my HRAFD was my first foray into, it's my first mod, really. I started way back in, with the retail version of Half-Life. It came with WorldCraft. You know, I started mapping back when I was a kid, basically. Okay. And, you know, I continued on for a while. I made a few deathmatch maps back in the day, and I found it very interesting, but, you know, I was a kid and, you know, didn't have the same patience or focus and, you know, capacity as I do now to really learn. And I, you know, lost interest and got into, you know, hard drugs and drinking and stuff, like most teenagers do. And music. But, you know, it wasn't until I wanted to kind of go a little further and really create something, you know, something that kind of complemented my music. And that's actually how this whole journey kind of started. You know, I thought, you know, why don't I expand on this universe? Because I had a backstory for my, you know, my musical project, AU. And I thought, why not make a little interactive experience? You know, why not immerse people? Because it's really what it's all about to me. I want to create. That's, you know, that's bottom line. That's what I wish to do. And I decided, hey, let's see what this Unreal Engine's all about. Well, all right. So I get into that, and I'm like, well, as far as I got was a little bit of a hard surface modeling and, you know, basically just completely failing at making materials and trying to struggle with this, you know, next gen sort of technology and feeling really inadequate. So one day, on a whim, I decided to download the Half-Life SDK and, it was kind of like seeing an old friend again. So it was kind of a whim that this ended up being a Half-Life mod. But
okay, so forgive me for interrupting you. Let me just clarify. You started by thinking, I want to create an interactive experience based around my music or based around a backstory that you'd had sort of in your mind for a while.
Yes.
Okay. And then you went into source modding. Is that what you were saying?
Well, actually, I went into Unreal.
Okay.
First, I got, you know, Unreal was free at this time.
Okay. So you were looking at the latest generations. I'm finding it quite difficult to...
Oh, yes, definitely.
All right, yeah, I can associate with that. So then you decided, okay, well, maybe I can go back a generation.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And it was much easier. Well, kind of. I mean, and, you know, going... Now, then with that, you have the limited skill set, which definitely created a lot of the frustration. Philip, I saw the whole the stream, and I was like, oh my god, like, you know, because when you get that perspective, I really thank you for that, because when you get that kind of perspective, you know exactly where you messed up. And a lot of the frustration comes with the fact that there was with the using the Gold Source engine, which wasn't made for a lot of the things that I was hoping to do. You know, I had to stretch the limits,
and yes, of course.
That's where a lot of the frustration came from, from the beginning.
Okay.
The spawning enemies, stuff like that. That whole first part of the game was a scripting nightmare because I couldn't figure out how to get the enemies to spawn from elsewhere and come to the shop, because I wanted to simulate a never-ending wave of enemies.
Okay.
And in order to do that, I had to have them spawn right in view of the player, but not. So I had to make fake carriages.
Yeah, I wonder why I could be shot through them.
Yes.
But I'm going to stop you there, because we're going to come on to that. So what made you decide that it had to be a mod? I mean, or did you look at other kind of interactive ways of putting the story together? I mean, did you look at like a video or something else? Or in your mind it was, it's got to be a mod?
It has to be a mod because, you know, it goes back to, you know, me playing games and stuff, and just like, I thought, you know, it's a really great medium to reach out and kind of touch people, you know, not in a perverted way, but
okay, so it was, there was no other choices in your mind. It was, I'm going to make a mod.
At this point, I've been doing music since 98, so I've tried everything and, you know, experimented with just about every genre out there. It's been one hell of a ride.
Can you say if you're a professional musician, or would you prefer not to say?
Oh, I guess you could call me a professional musician. I'm selling albums online. I'm playing live shows. I've got a live backing band and everything. And
okay.
I've actually been
fantastic
doing that in conjunction with, you know, the game and everything.
Okay. So I have a terrible, terrible confession to make now. I don't remember much of the music from the mod.
Oh, that is fine. Because I did hide a lot of it.
Okay.
Often
in an action kind of mod, you know, you hear da 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 da, and the music starts just as you're about to sort of play. But in when I played the Fever Dream, that I was more focused on what was happening, and in many ways that's good, because you should be unconscious of the music. You should. As a viewer, you should be unconscious of it in films and things. It should affect you tremendously, but you should be unconscious of it. Did you create all of the music in the mod?
I did.
Okay.
Now, with all the sounds that were going on, and I realized, yes, it was definitely really wordy, I thought putting music in would just compound the problem, because there was already... You know, there is already a lot to deal with as far as sound goes, and I did not want to have a sensory overload for the player.
Okay.
You know, I didn't want to have anything like that take place. So what I did was I hid the songs with an in-game phonograph players.
Okay.
That were in-game.
So it's not background music as such. It's sort of part of the story. Okay, sometimes.
When the boss fight and the main menu music, as well as the intro music.
Okay, all right. I can't remember anything except my voice and screaming in the boss fight, but we'll come on to that a bit later. So let's talk about the story. I mean, I'm presuming that you have a history of, you know, like late 19th century Americana.
Yes. That's one. I'm really passionate about that area, era. It's part of my persona, so it just had to take place back then. I do have a backstory, but the thing about these mods is, since they're mods, I decided to make them non-canonical, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
And each one of them is more procedural, it's not episodic. So what I'm doing is just kind of making little one-offs. I have a backstory, which is actually pretty much, for the most part, only really loosely tied in with these mods.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it ended up being a 72-page almost novella. So
okay.
So there's a big adventure in there, but I just, Gold Source, I'm not gonna be able to bring it to life in Gold Source. You know, that's for in the future. I'm just having fun with these mods now.
Yeah, of course.
But really, I just I collect antiques, and I read only books from that era.
Okay. All right. That's pretty cool. So before this, you'd made a couple of DM maps with Worldcraft. So once you'd realized that maybe Source or the UDK was just a bit beyond your time frame, in the sense that you wanted to create something, but it was going to take too long to learn, you went back to Hammer. I know that you were using TWHL, and I presume you got a lot of help from that. But I mean, how long did it take you, approximately, of course, from saying, okay, I'm going to make it with Hammer until you actually released? Not, and I'm not talking hours, I'm talking in, you know, months and years.
I'm going to say I started March 12th, I think. And
of this year?
Yes. I figured that thing out. No pun intended.
Pardon the pun.
But basically, it's because I get really... I pretty much get obsessive about something. When I set my mind to do something, there's a lot of things that I wanted to kind of... A lot of cliches I wanted to break as far as work ethic goes. You know, a lot of people, they start something... and they decide to just let it go, or something comes up, and I wasn't going to let that happen, because once I start something, it has to be finished. That is a big pet peeve of mine, not finishing what I start. So that was one thing. I worked sometimes up to 16 hours in a day, because not only did I have, you know, this whole single player pack to do, but I had the learning curve, because, you know, there's so much new stuff that I was learning, and now I'm, you know... But, you know, the thing is, I set a reasonable goal, you know, in my mind at the time, a reasonable goal. And that's what it is, really. You don't want to get too ambitious at first. Like the people that do, like, ultra high definition and everything's, you know, static meshes and stuff and in gold source. And I'm like, no. We're just going to stick to the old school. You know, we're just going to, you know, and I don't know how to code, you know, and I don't know how to code, and I don't have the means to either. So I kind of had to get really creative, and that's why there's only two guns or two weapons.
Okay.
I mean, none of the other ones would have translated to the 19th century, because we didn't you didn't have pump action shotguns until the 1890s. And you didn't have,
you could have had a crossbow, I suppose.
You could
there have been a crossbow at that time.
You could have done the crossbow, but at that point it was between the... There weren't any really good sniping positions in the game, for one thing. So you got to think about the balance there. It's like, well,
of course,
with the pistol, or the Colt, as powerful as it was, because it was, you know, the Colt Python from Half-Life. You know, would it be redundant to put the crossbow in, because it has a slower rate of fire? It's just about as...
No. I wasn't suggesting you should have done. I was just saying that there was a possibility. And, of course, when you decide to make those decisions, you have to change the way the layout works, because, as you say, you can't just put a weapon in and hope that it works within the mod. So let's talk about the gun. I read somewhere, maybe in the Beastery, I'm not sure, that you actually recorded the sound. It's from a Colt, and you recorded it yourself. Is that right?
Same thing with the Gatling gun. I really, you know, I was into sound design too a little bit before this as well. I was just kind of, you know, trying my hand at all sorts of different things in the game industry. You know, I'd been, you know, for my years of recording, you know, I'd had, you know, garnered a lot of experience doing it. So I thought, you know, I'll do my own sounds. So I get, you know, I got this nice little field recorder, $99, and I just kind of take it out there with the gun.
Oh, I misunderstood. When I read that, I thought that you bought the gun. You kind of said that I bought the gun in like a convenience store, or you bought it in a convenience store. And I thought he bought a gun in a convenience store. I said, okay, so I misread that then. Okay.
Well, technically, the other gun that I used was a Christmas present from a very long time ago. Many Christmases ago, there was a gas station that had a gun shop attached to it. And, you know.
Okay. All right. So that's where I kind of got confused. And for Europeans, the idea of giving somebody a gun for Christmas is like, whoa, that's like saying I bought somebody a tank, or, you know, I bought them a horse, or it's just like so weird that we wouldn't even think like that.
It's an American phenomenon, really. You know, that's a whole other kind of animal to tackle, but, you know.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not
really certain
people.
Say that again, sorry?
What?
Could you repeat what you said? I didn't hear you, sorry.
Yeah, I'm not running around murdering people. I'm just using them.
No. Most Europeans know that most Americans are not like that. But just that idea of buying a gun in like a gas station is like, whoa, that's really strange.
It sounds funny.
So let's talk about the weapon balance, because I think that there is an imbalance here. Mm. The Colt was too powerful, and then the bayonet was not powerful enough. Do you agree?
Basically, though, I had planned on the player never running out of ammo. I think a lot of people missed that the little crates that were they were covered with green cloth. Those were all power-ups. I marked them. So, like, I really the player shouldn't run out of ammo.
So the bayonet should just be an absolute last
Yes,
resource if you
last resort. You're
want
right,
something
Hans.
to have a bit of fun. Okay. I'm not sure if I ever did run out of ammo, though. I think I must have. I'm not really aware of that when you're live streaming because you're trying to talk and you're trying to be interesting. Okay, one of those things that I might have to go back and sort of play again. Well, in that case, I mean, if you put lots of ammo around, then it's a moot point because I was going to say that there could have been a slight more balance. You know, the bayonet could have been a bit stronger, and the Colt could have had two shots to kill the enemies. But
If I
all
was
right.
able to do custom code, I would have been able to do that. I would have had shotguns, I would have had a double build. I would have had tons of weapons in there if I could have done my custom code and enemies too, but
Yeah, no, I like the idea of not having many weapons.
it's more
I'm not.
realistic.
Yeah, I do. I'm not really a big fan of having like 20 weapons because eventually what happens is that you get to a point and you pick up a weapon and you say, okay, well, around the corner is an enemy which I'm going to need this weapon for. And it becomes sort of, you know, not so interesting. So
Yes.
although I complained about your hand in my What the Head Crab, I forgot about the hand quite quickly. So, you know, don't take it to heart that I hated
Oh
your
yeah,
hand.
that's fine. You can say, hey, that's another thing. I'm open to all criticism. I mean, it doesn't have to be. It can be negative, and there really doesn't have to be an accompanying explanation for it. I mean, it's your opinion. Whatever you want to say, go ahead and say it. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I'm going to learn from it at most.
I mean, a lot of hands are horrible, even with people who are experienced. So I just mentioned that because that was my sort of initial observation when I made a podcast about it. And I think you actually sent me an email and saying I hated
I hate them.
the hand too. But I say I wasn't sure because when I get a message, anybody could put that they were called half rats. And I didn't have a way of verifying that you who were who you said you were, you know?
Yes.
All right then. So let's go back to what you were talking about earlier with the spawning of the enemies. That was super frustrating for me at the beginning.
Yeah, and I know it's very. Some of the stuff was very obtuse. Now, in the README, I do explain how to put the boards up. There's a lot of explanation in the README and stuff. I know that it's kind of, nobody, not many people are going to read the README, but I tried my
Nothing
hardest.
that is required by a player should ever be in a README.
Yeah.
Nothing. If it's not part of the game, then it's not part of the game. It's got to be there. The beastery is all really is fantastic, and I love it when people do those kind of things because it's extra information. But yeah, putting the boards up, and one of my sort of collaborators on Run Think Shoot Live, he put the boards up on the outside, and
Yeah.
then was stuck on the outside, and of course you just have to reload. But wasn't there a way of creating some? I mean, when the Vorticons normally appear, they appear with you like a flash or something. My problem wasn't so much that you had, you know, forever spawning enemies, but they just appeared out of nowhere with no sound, with no image.
Oh yeah, that's true. That is really. Now that would have been
Did
a lot of
not.
sprite work. Now with the thing is like well, actually, I'm not sure because I'm thinking about it. They were all spawned with Monster Makers, and you have really limited flexibility as far as what you can do when you use the Monster Maker. So there's a lot of, crossroads that I was presented with along the way. I had to make decisions like, okay, do I want to do it this way? Well, if I use a Monster Maker, I can't. If I just spawn them in, normally, I can't do this, So I had to make a lot of decisions, and I just basically I wanted that desired effect, and I had to, kind of,
Compromise.
yeah, there's a lot of compromise involved.
Did they get picked up by the beta testers?
I got some pretty detailed reports. I mean, I got to be honest, if it wasn't for the beta guys, Half Rats was going to be complete garbage. So I mean, they really, because I had burned myself out on it by the time that stage had come around. I had really not managed my time very well, and I had bags under my eyes that I could put my luggage in at that point. Right. So I was really loath to keep going on it after a while, but I kind of stuck in there and made all the changes that I could. And
at what point? Sorry, carry on.
Well, they caught a lot of things. There's a lot of things that they caught, and basically everything that they caught, I fixed. But just some of the stuff I really couldn't, and still have the game function, you know,
as you wanted it to,
as I wanted it to. So there's a lot of compromise and a lot of you know, finger crossing there.
How early did you get them involved?
Well, a lot of people just kind of came to me, and I was like really surprised.
No, but I mean, how early in the development? Because too often people ask beta testers to test near the end, and then they find so many big problems, and people say, "Oh, well, we can't change it now; it's too late."
Okay, yeah, that must have been my mistake then, because it was near the end. It was.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm heavily involved in beta testing. I set up a group called the Beta Testers Collective, where we got like 10 people, and we test mods for people. And for us, the best way is when you've just really got no textures. This is the basic idea we're trying to get across, and we test it there, and then we say, okay, make these changes, and then people start to put in the details. But what often happens is people gives something to us, and then we make a suggestion, but it's too late to change. Yes. And it's frustrating for everybody, because you realize as a creator, oh my God, if I can't, they're right, but I can't change anything now. And it's frustrating for us, because we feel as though we wasted our time, because you can't make a change for based on, you know. So as you can probably tell, I'm pretty passionate about that. That's why I was asking.
Yeah, I'll definitely bear that in mind. I mean, that is, because when I thought of beta, I thought, well, you know, later stages. But yeah, that's a, you know, I could do map by map even.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just give whoever you decided to get to test it, give it to them as early as possible. Get them to play it many, many times and get all sorts of feedback. So we do that. So do you feel that you've accomplished pretty much all that you wanted to do with the first one, the Fever Dream?
Yes, I do. And that really kind of edified, you know, that I was on the right track. Is, you know, I mean, with all the flaws that there was, you know, I learned from them, and basically it had more impact in this mod did than much of the stuff that I've done in my life so far. And I thought, wow, you know, I have kind of a fan base, and I'm like, wow, that's something to, you know. And I just went into it, I just wanted to give people something nice to play, you know. And I mean, yeah, there was the ulterior motive of promoting my music and stuff like that, because they are kind of tied in together. But I mean, that was, you know, it was just really, you know, a heartwarming experience to be able to kind of give back what, you know, games that I played and mods that I've played over the years had given me. So it was, everything.
I mean, in general, the gaming community is very appreciative of people like yourself who create mods and things, because it's what keeps us playing. I mean, there's obviously a lot of people who just write stupid reviews and complain. But in general, the gaming community is, you know, loves people like you. They love, you know, people making things. And yes, it does have its faults, but every mod has got its faults. And considering you only took six and a half, or, I mean, it's a fantastic piece of work. You should be proud, and you should be pleased that you've got a fan base. And I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to the second part. But you'll have to be careful now, because people's expectations will be higher. They will expect you to produce a more polished result.
Oh yeah.
Knowing that this was your first one.
And I am prepared to deliver that polished result, because I've got all the information I need now. And basically none of the things, you know, that's my commitment. None of the things that peeved people in the first one are going to be present in the second one. There's not going to be, I'm not going to go with any of the, there's not going to be companions to follow you. Because that's a stretch, you know, in a gold source kind of application, you know.
It's like, such hard work. Even when done properly, it doesn't always work.
No, especially when, you know, at first there was no incentive for the players to even have their characters follow them. So I had to rework a lot of things. You know, I had to put gates up that they had to go through that required certain NPCs.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I mean,
so let's go back to your music just for a moment. One of the main reasons for building the mod was to sort of help promote that. Have you got extra hits on your Facebook page or increased sales?
I have, actually. A lot more than usual. I mean, so it's kind of weird because my normal music fan base is almost completely separate from the kind of fan base that I got from, you know, as a result of making the mods. So it's like two different communities kind of split down the middle. It's just split asunder, you know? So it's kind of strange, but you know, I mean, it works.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting a new group of people who wouldn't have normally heard your music and visited your page.
People that I can't access, people that I can't play live to. So it's kind of like a live show, one hell of a live show that, you know, you're going to be, you get to be a part of yourself, you know?
Yeah. So,
aside from that, basically, been playing locally, you know, a lot, and possibly, you know, have a few outside the States shows. Just going to go over the border to Canada, hopefully, this year, finally. Right. And a few out-of-state shows. But other than that, basically, I'm still kind of just starting out, you know, with this incarnation of my musical project. You know, I just started out a couple of years ago. You know, I played a few conventions and whatnot. It's definitely a different animal than, say, doing, you know, rock and roll or metal or, you know, indie stuff. You know, that's... So, you know, I thought, you know...
And do you feel that the creativity involved in creating a mod and creating music, they sort of complement each other or they fight against each other? Or how does that work, do you think?
Well, as far as time goes, they're at each other's throats. But
of course.
As far as creativity goes, they definitely complement each other because, you know, usually actually to write, I will play a video game that will... It can be any game, really, and it'll kind of give me ideas. And mostly reading books and playing video games are what inspires me. You know, I've got, I think, you know, as far as my writing style is concerned, that is, I get that from, you know, I draw inspiration from a lot of the old greats as far as authors go and everything too. And that's where a lot of the vernacular from Half Rats comes from. As far as the wordiness, the language as far as written language then was pretty wordy, but it depends on if you're reading you know, there's some differences between, you know, American and British authors from them too. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of the inspiration for my vernacular comes from Doyle. Actually, I got I got all three volumes of his best works from 1905, I believe.
Okay.
And the books are from 1905, so
fantastic.
Yeah, I've got library
to draw upon.
Yes.
All right, perfect. I mean, as you know, I sort of said that I felt it was, or as you possibly know in my review, I said that I felt it was very well written, but it was overwritten.
Yes.
And I feel that from a player's point of view, and you might have misjudged this, because as a creator, what you feel is enough or is good is very different from just as a player who hasn't been involved in any development cycle. That it interrupted my gameplay too much.
Yeah, I kind of felt
that. I spent too long like reading and listening, thinking, all right, I'll get the picture. I want to shoot shit. Come on, let's get on with it.
Yeah, see, you know, I had originally wanted to, you know, it was kind of like a roller coaster ride. What I was trying to do was create different effects as far as the pacing goes. So, for instance, the beginning, it's fast-paced. You know, I wanted to have kind of... I wanted to be able to explain what was going on exactly. And I tried to keep it, you know, keep the long-winded speeches to places that didn't have a lot of action. You know, I tried to keep, like, because I wanted to take the player on a roller coaster ride. Like, you know... As far as like the horror is concerned and stuff like that, like the way I wanted to pace it was kind of kill the player slowly. I hate jump scares and stuff like that. So what I did is I try to kind of evoke the Lovecraftian kind of, you know, ambiguity of making people afraid of a light switch. You know what I mean? Like slowly just building up this kind of atmosphere to where they get paranoid and they're like, wow, what's going to happen next?
What's next?
I want to shed this sinister light on everything. You know what I mean? It could be, you know, a plant in the corner. you know, things start to scare you, you know, after a while. It's like, oh my God, what's going on? I'm in this entirely different world. And I wanted to also kind of get the pacing down as far as that's concerned by giving players a rest stop where they are relatively safe, or at least have the get the notion that they are relatively safe. And then that's when I wanted to have them talk and get some story, you know, kind of like a little junction here and there, like the in the house with Barney, you know, the Dwyer mansion.
That
was pretty long-winded, but it was kind of a plot point. So it was kind of like, you know, it's like a cutscene without a cutscene.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I was going for, and I was kind of trying to. It was actually Half-Rats is meant to be played kind of slow, so it's for the player's consideration and for them to kind of take in and soak up what's going on, rather than run through. And I know not everybody's going to have that sort of, you know, mindset going into a game, you know, because they want to just play, you know, but you know, I guess it's hard to kind of get everybody's wishes.
Absolutely. Taken care of. You're not going to keep everybody happy. And there will be the people who are very happy, that who want to, you know, hear the backstory and, you know, and see what's going on. And maybe I approached it. But perhaps what you'll need to do next time is set, I mean, not set the tone, but make it clear from the beginning that this is how it is. Because I was expecting something else. And then when I got something different, immediately I have like a negative filter on something, whether it's negative or not, because my expectation was like a horror survival game. Okay, great. But it was almost like it was a storytelling with some action elements.
Yeah, there was very narrative, you know, narration based narrative.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that at the beginning, and I don't know whether you should change that or not, but maybe you should make it clearer from the beginning that this is what you're going to get. If you don't like it, well, I've told you what you're going to get. And that's one of the things that beta testers will tell you, whether, oh, actually that was a little bit too long, and you know, maybe if you'd have told the story in a slightly different way, or told it with environmental things, or, you know, otherwise. What about your decision to have the player speak? Because I don't know whether you know, but as Half-Lifers, we are generally very much against that, because our protagonist doesn't speak.
Yes.
Did you consciously make a decision? No, I'm going to break that, you know.
I did. Because I was trying to develop Half-Rats as a character, so I wanted to have, he's not Gordon, obviously, well, he's not supposed to be. I noticed in the playthrough the model kind of showed up, but I have a player model, actually, that was supposed to be there, but it didn't seem to work.
Didn't work, okay.
But this is Half-Rats, so he's going to speak a bit. Now, that kind of goes back to playing games like Blood, you know, and, you know, I had Caleb and, you know, just wisecracks and stuff like that, and you know, different things like that. I always wanted kind of a protagonist that... I actually like wordy protagonists for the most part, because I know one of the peeves of mine is, like, you know, you play... Like, I would play, like, Silent Hill, and there'd be, like, you know, some guy hanging by his nipples, you know, with hooks in his eyes and stuff, and the player would be like... Or the player character would be like, oh, that's nasty. You know what I mean? So I thought, like, there's not as much reaction. Like, I wanted there to be a somewhat realistic... You know, as realistic as it could be, reaction to what was going on around the player. Okay. Because in real life, you see that and you're going to freak out. So,
yeah.
You know, and then I wanted to, you know, approaching Half-Rats as a character that talked was, you know, he needed to talk. Now, whether or not he needed to be so wordy, it was basically, I've got to work on my writing skills still. You know, I'm pretty sure that there was a lot of different ways I could have accomplished using the vernacular, you know, less long-winded soliloquies, you know, than that.
Yeah, maybe you should offer an option where it's the player's choice. The player gets to choose whether he hears the rest of the story. They can jump out at any particular point. Because one thing that I did find is that when I got sort of stuck with a long speech, if I started to play and then I died, I had to go right to the beginning of the speech again.
Yeah,
and that happened with Barney, and that's not acceptable. Now, no matter how good the writing is, having to listen to it again is just too frustrating.
And once again, like I wish I could have done that, but with Gold Source, the nature of the intercourse between the characters, it was all scripted to be done with multi-managers, and it was, you know, so
maybe it's my fault for not saving immediately after, but okay, all right. Well, as you say, I mean, you are limited by you know, Gold Source. So,
yeah, there's a million things I would have done differently had I had the skills, or not, well, skills too, but if I would have had the proper tool set.
Right. Okay. So let's jump on a bit further into the mod. There was a point in the mod where I got stuck. You probably watched it on the stream. I want you to be honest with me now. Do you think it was my fault or your fault? And I'm open to either answer.
It is.
Do you know the part I mean?
I'm going to have to say the part with the powerhouse, that was really nobody's fault, because I had nobody had run into anything like that. I mean, that was the weirdest thing. I mean, the strangest thing. And I noticed a lot of the problems that people have been facing, too, that I've seen are different on my version. What I did is I actually deleted my building version, and I downloaded the actual release.
Okay.
And things are different. So I'm, you know, wondering if it has anything to do with maybe even installing other mods and maybe not, you know, might be fighting with each other somehow.
Could be. I mean, what I was referring to with the powerhouse was, I mean, that particular, I'll call it a bug for now, the fact that I couldn't open the door unless I had the Colt.
That's weird.
I don't blame you for that at all. I really don't. I mean, that's the sort of thing that even 100 beta testers might not pick up. What I meant was that should I have known that that was the powerhouse?
Well, once again, it's you'd have to listen to the speech, basically, because, okay, so he's like, that gate's electric, you know.
Yeah, I got that part. Yeah.
You can hear the machinery, basically. I've got that. You can hear it through the walls, and if you look up, you can see the smoke.
Yeah, I saw
and
the smoke afterwards.
If you follow those wires and cables, you'll kind of see that they all kind of coalesce into that area, and there should have been some sort of like little, I guess, transformer that was on the outside of it, or at least you can see how things were kind of the cables kind of, you know, converged on that building.
I mean, I'm not trying to say that it was your fault, because I do recognize that sometimes it's the player's fault, but nobody in the chat could figure out where I was supposed to go, and that might have been because I was leading them to think that way, and that always happens. But it was interesting. Anyway, so we get to the part with the what was the name of your gargantuan replacement?
I just called it a behemoth.
Behemoth, okay, yeah. I had a lot of trouble with that because he killed Barney too early. Oof. And then I couldn't get him in the right place for my cannon. And that was like a disaster, that area, for me anyway.
Yeah, it definitely, if Barney's too far forward, I guess he gets in the Gargantua's way, because the Gargantua was programmed to do the hit and for Barney to run to a certain spot.
Okay.
But if Barney runs there prematurely, then he'll block the path. He'll block the node path that I had set up.
Yeah, that was interesting. And then I had to go back and forth. But anyway, but let's jump to the final battle. The thing that was the most frustrating was that there was no way. You never gave me feedback that I was doing the right thing. You never told me that firing the cannon was hurting the demon or whatever it was called. And I kept doing it and kept saying, am I doing the right thing? How long do I do this for? Because it's frustrating as a player not to know, you know, am I 99 out of 100, or am I not hitting them at all? Am I aiming for the spiky bits, or am I aiming for the center? So that was quite frustrating for me.
Yeah, and I actually have no idea how to take a brush-based boss and kind of, you know, have some sort of damage indication.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a sound like a rah that you got hit or something. Yeah.
Of course, then with it being like Hammer doesn't know that it's supposed to be a boss. To Hammer, it's just a collection of entities and a brush.
Sure.
So it was really hard to kind of like every time it gets hit, how could I? There's no real way to within the code to make a BSP produce a sound when it's hit or damaged.
Okay.
There is, but you wouldn't be able to hear it over all of the noise, you know, because it was made out of flesh. So you, I guess, when, every time you hit it, you would have heard the sound, but
okay.
It wasn't going to be loud enough anyway.
To hear it.
So there is.
All right, but it was an interesting idea. I like the, you know, being on the train and sort of, you know, having to dodge his rockets or whatever they were. So it was an interesting boss, but just as I said, because you didn't know if you were doing the right thing, it sort of came a bit frustrating. And then there was one time I did kill it, and then I got killed immediately afterwards. Like, oh my god!
Yeah, that happened to me too. At first, the boss he creamed me. I mean, I was smeared all over that train.
Yeah,
so many times. So I really had to nerf that boss, and I really had to provide the player with more goods to draw from. I kind of had to have that classic kind of boss fight.
And that's something that you wanted? You wanted like that classic
thing? With everything in the game, I kind of wanted to kind of harken back to the old days in some way. And that's why a lot of the places kind of seem... Because we're kind of used nowadays. I mean, even, you know, even people that have been playing games for a long time to being kind of told where to go and what to do. So I kind of wanted to go, you know, depart from that a bit. So... You know, that's just one other way, because I think it's not good for the gaming gene pool.
No, it's not. It's not. We should figure things out for ourselves. But of course, we need to be, you know, given clues and made easy. But at the same time, you know, it's more fun when you figure something out.
They did require some thinking. I guess I was reading too many Sherlock Holmes stories. You had to be really, you had to have a keen sense of observation.
Yeah, we're not all Sherlock Holmes, I'm afraid. Think of us as Watsons. That's how maybe you need to build the next one. Everybody's a Watson. Poor chap. All right, now, if I've given you the impression that I was unhappy or a negative, because, of course, you know, in interviews like this, you always pick on the things that you're unhappy about. I'm sorry, because that's certainly not the impression I want to have.
Oh, that's
I mean, I did enjoy it.
You don't have to. You do not have to explain any of your opinions to me. You really don't. Right to think whatever you want. I'm the creator. I'm the producer. I produce things. If the public doesn't like it, then I'm not going to curl up into a ball and cry. I'm going to give them what they want, really. Or at least try my hardest to.
No, I don't have to, but I choose to, because I feel that if somebody puts a lot of effort in, it's always nice to hear positive things. I mean, I've put over 13 years of my life into my website, and I get complaints, and I'm okay with that because it makes my website better. But it's always nice for people to say, oh, I really love the site, or I really love the mod. And I wanted to say that I did. I actually enjoyed the mod, as frustrated as I might have sounded on the live stream. And one thing you should know is that when people play it on their own and when they play live streams, there is a different response. And you can sound much more negative on a live stream than you might actually when you're at home. So I think you've done a fantastic piece of work and you should be very pleased. Imagine now that you can make a phone call and you can go back and you can call to March 11th and you can talk to yourself. What would you tell yourself about the mod? What would you warn them? What would you say, keep doing? What would you say to yourself?
It's funny because I, you know, in the backstory, I'm a time traveler, but, you know, to be honest, right now I can't really, I think everything that I did was for a reason, and even the mistakes that I made kind of needed to be made, because I don't think I'm very stubborn. I wouldn't have listened to myself.
Okay, yeah.
I would put myself to saw it off.
yeah, exactly. It's my life. Leave me alone. I'm going to do it my way. But you must have learned something. Of course you have. And you're right. You know, you had to do things some way to learn. And even if you'd called yourself and said, don't do it this way, it wouldn't make any difference because you have to go through that experience. But let's turn it around a little bit then. What will you do differently now for the next part?
Custom code. No companions.
Okay.
I'm going to leave the player more or less on their own. I mean, there will be places. I mean, it's going to be less wordy. I'm going to stick straight to the point. Actually, the vernacular is going to be more accurate this go round. And Chums, actually, by the way, Chums.
Is it? I did. I checked it myself. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So for the listeners who don't know what's happening, there was kind of like, I was doing the playthrough and Barney says chum, and I said chum. That sounds like a really modern word. Are you sure he would have said that? I was like shouting at you. And then afterwards I checked and it was like, what was it? It was like late 18th century, I think, wasn't it?
Yes, Chamber Fellows.
Yeah, Chamber Fellows, that's right.
The words that they had back then. You know, right, the writers, you know, wrote differently than they would speak on a day-to-day basis, too. So
yes.
A lot of the, there wasn't much difference, actually, now than there was back then as far as people, like, normally conversed. I mean, there was, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, because I've got collections of poems that were written by more rustic folk, you know, more simpler folk, and then I've got, you know, stuff that was, you know, I've got, you know, basically stuff from, you know, the great writers, you know, the greats. And, you know, so I've kind of, and as well, I've got tons of medical books and etiquette books and dictionaries and stuff like that too, just, and books about everyday life. So I've been able to kind of deduce from that and, like, you know, how half rats would have spoke, and that's how I write my lyrics for my songs and, you know, all that. And so I've got kind of a control group as far as, you know, the vernacular that I use.
Okay. I mean, the vernacular was fantastic. I mean, as I said, it was really well written, and to hear them speaking like that, and it was really good.
It's fun. That's one of my. That's another pet peeve of mine. When you have a period, you know, when you have a period setting, you need to cover all the bases, so to speak.
Yeah. And they did speak in longer terms. I'm not sure if you've heard of somebody called Thomas Stern. I'm reading, or started to read, the Opinions and Thoughts of Tristan Sandy. Have you heard of that?
No. I do not think so.
Okay, don't worry. Even the first chapter, it's just so wordy. You know, it takes two paragraphs just to say what we would say in one sentence.
Yes.
So, you know, back then they did speak, you know, in those kind of ways. So, all right. So tell us a little bit about the next part then. I mean, I don't want to sort of talk too much about it because I don't want to, you know, spoil it for anybody.
Secrets.
But what's it called? I remember seeing it, but I couldn't pronounce it.
It's Half Rat's Parasomnia.
Parasomnia. Okay.
There's a reason why these games these mods were made are titled after different sleep related things.
Disorders. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So how far are you? Have you got the story fixed for that then?
Oh yeah, the story's fixed. I've got a whole map of the area too, and I've got everything kind of like worked out. I'm doing that beforehand now because Half Rat's a Fever Dream. That was all off the top of my head. All the dialogue I wrote right there on the spot.
Okay.
I basically sent like all of Devin's parts, the voice actor for Burnaby and Trask. I made those up right there on Skype.
Okay.
And I made up the story as I went along. So I don't want to do that this time. I kind of want to plan things out beforehand. So I've been doing that. I've been doing a lot of the textures too. I've got about 85 textures done right now.
Okay.
So, and I'm just kind of, you know, I'm tailoring the textures to the game. So I don't have to go searching for things that might fit this time. You know, and I'm making my own from scratch. Everything's going to be 100% original. You know.
All right, perfect. And I don't want you to put a timeline because, I mean, that's not really fair. But, I mean, we're not talking a year away. We're talking less for Parasomnia.
I still need to flesh out my team more because I am not a modeler by any means. I need some help with that. I've got one guy, he's very talented, Foxtrop, his name is, and we've got a few of the characters down, and I've got them textured already, as you can probably see if you go to the Parasomnia page. You know, I've got some sneak peeks of one of the classes of monsters that are going to be in the game. You know, I've got that all, I went ahead and even wrote kind of a game design document as well for this, too. So, I mean, there's a lot more preparation involved, you know, in the pre-production stage. Then, you know, because I'm not doing it on a whim, you know, I'm going in, you know, guns blazing, I guess.
This comes back to what we were talking about earlier. This is kind of what you've learned from the first one. The more planning you put in at the beginning, the better.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Good. And anything you kind of finish with? I mean, in general, you're happy, aren't you? I mean, you're happy with the mod. You're ecstatic about the reception, but you're happy with the mod itself?
I am. I mean, to me, it's, you know, it's like I said, like, that's one thing. When you start making things, you know, you're never going to enjoy it as much as somebody that didn't make it would, you know, as much as a player would, because absolutely. You already know what's happening.
You've seen behind the curtain.
Yes. But I mean, as far as the mod is concerned, I mean, I accomplished what I set out to do. So yes, I'm happy.
All right, good. And final thoughts for people who are thinking of making their own mod. I mean, you've kind of gone through the, can't think of the phrase now, but you've gone through the spinny thing or whatever. I'm sorry, I completely lost it. But what advice would you give to somebody who's just started?
I guess it's a Half-Life mod, so be prepared for Gold Source for you to ask for a, I'm trying to think of something clever, some clever analogy. God, I can't do it right now. I'm a horrible speaker. I have to read from a script. Drunk. That's the only one. ask for,
free whiskey.
Ask for top shelf bourbon, and then Gold Source will give you 5 o'clock. I don't know if you have if you're familiar with that. I think that's an American bottom shelf.
I don't know what that means. What does it mean? Oh, 5 o'clock. It's like
it's a brand of. Yeah, it's a brand of it's basically it'll kill you.
Okay.
So be prepared for that. You know, be prepared to do a lot of creative workarounds. And definitely set your goals realistically. That's the best advice. Realistically. Try to use your powers of rational mind to come up with some way to make something new on Gold Source, but something that isn't so ambitious that the engine will simply say no. You know.
Yes.
And then commit. Do not quit. Just keep going. You know, do not give up on it. That's the one thing. You're not gonna get anywhere if you give up. Or if
excellent
you lose interest.
Advice.
Do something that you're never gonna lose interest in too. That's the first thing. You know, come up with something that you're never gonna lose interest in. And, you know, definitely stop in it, you know, the whole Half-Life if you have any problems, because you're gonna have
Those guys really know their engines. Their engine. So
I feel bad to this day for moaning so much on there, because I was really frustrated a lot of times, and I was like, tearing my hair out and god.
Yeah, I'm sure they're used to it. Sort of new people coming along and asking questions that, you know, why doesn't it do it like this? It should do. That's the best way. And they're like, yeah, we said that 15 years ago, but it doesn't. And you just got to find a way around it.
Yes. So I can imagine they've got patience of saints, really. To be honest with you, I wasn't expecting that going into it, and, you know, being out of, like, there's a whole kind of new who's who, and, you know, in a lot of respects, you know, that I didn't know of the first time around, because the last time I was really involved in mods was basically just playing them, and I used to get them from Planet Half-Life, and, you know, I used to read reviews by this guy who was called Silver Sorrow. I don't know whatever happened to that guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know. I think he might still be around, but I'm not sure.
He doesn't review anymore. His reviews were hilarious. And I remember he was definitely the go-to guy as far as, like, you know, knowing which mods to play and which mods to kind of shy away from, you know.
Yeah, but it's changed. I mean, Planet Half-Life is not updated anymore. And, you know, remember, we're talking about a game that was released 17 years ago this November. 17 years is a long time. You know, a lot has happened. So, anyway, I'm going to recap your advice. Choose something that you love and stick with it. That's great advice. That's really what people should do. Because and don't be too ambitious. So often you hear people say, oh, I'm gonna build this. And it's like you're trying to write a 1,000-page novel when you haven't even written any short stories yet. You know, just be sensible about what you can and can't do, not what you want to do. What you can do.
Yes.
So that's excellent advice. So thank you very much for taking the time and getting up really early for me. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Looking forward to playing Parasomnia. And, you know, maybe I'll be able to post some information on Run, Think, Shoot, Live about it. Maybe some previews. I'll probably cover it in What the Headcrab, which is my sort of bi-weekly update of what's happening. So, you know.
Yeah, Parasomnia needs some press. I need to get that team going because I want to get started on it. I'm taking it a lot slower too because basically I became estranged to my girlfriend during the So I kind of want to avoid that again because I kind of became lost to the world as far as what, you know, development goes because I was stuck in here.
Right.
In this very
room. I understand. And you want a real life again. We understand that. Well, I'll do my best to give Parasomnia as much publicity as possible, and hopefully that will get more people interested, and hopefully that will push things along at the speed that you want them to go. So fingers crossed. Thank you very much, and we're done. So thanks, listeners, and remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning. Goodbye.
See you.
Thank you for downloading and listening to this podcast from RunThinkShootLive.com. For more podcasts, including exclusive interviews and roundtable chats, please visit RunThinkShootLive.com/listen. Remember, finishing Half-Life is just the beginning. RunThinkShootLive.com lists and reviews single-player maps and mods from the Half-Life series of games.